Economic Development to order and welcome everyone. My intention is to have us out of here at around 2, no later than 2:15, so that you can plan to get back to your offices and do other work. We're going to actually do the rules in a little bit because I want to get Corey Streisinger up here, who has an appointment, I understand, with the governor at 1:30, and that way we can all pencil our questions to the governor so that way we can feel like we get to meet him as well. But I think we'll start with that. Members, we're going to be doing a lot of insurance legislation in this committee, and the department is responsible for a lot of the materials that will be coming before us. So I thought what would be a great way to begin the committee would be to ask the department to give an overview of some of the pieces of legislation that we will be seeing in the weeks and months ahead, so that we can prepare for that. And with Ms. Streisinger is Joel Arroyo. I think most of you know as the insurance administrator for the state. So welcome to the committee. And with that, Ms. Streisinger, I would just ask you to begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate it. For the record, I'm Corey Streisinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and with me is Joel Arroyo, Administrator of the Insurance Division. And again, I do want to apologize for my schedule and needing to be out of here at 1:30, but Joel will also, we've divided up the issues, but Joel is very familiar with everything we're going to talk about and so can continue if there are questions after I leave. What we want to do this afternoon is give you a brief overview of the insurance markets and what we hear from insurance consumers, and then our insurance agenda and what we expect to see coming forward for this session. I'd like to very briefly start with an overview of DCBS, as well as the insurance division. Department of Consumer and Business Services is the state's largest business regulatory agency, and our mission is to protect and serve Oregon's consumers and workers while supporting a positive business climate in the state. In addition to the insurance division, we include the workers' compensation, Oregon OSHA, building codes, finance and corporate securities, and a couple of smaller programs, including one that's directly insurance-related, the Oregon Medical Insurance Pool. The insurance division regulates Oregon's $13 billion insurance industry, including 1,600 licensed insurance companies and 55,000 licensed insurance agents and brokers, currently called insurance producers. That's the new terminology based on legislation you passed last session. Our mission is to administer the insurance code for the protection of the insurance buying public while supporting a positive business climate. The insurance code states that it is to be construed liberally for the protection of the insurance buying public, and that's what we try to do. We carry out our mission by focusing on three areas: financial soundness of insurers, the availability and affordability of insurance, and the fair treatment of consumers. Our financial regulation program, which is nationally accredited and was reaccredited in 2003, has been successful in avoiding any insurance insolvencies in the past few years. That's, of course, critically important for the insurance buying public because the number one priority is to make sure that coverage that you've paid for is there when you need it. But I'm not going to spend any more time talking about that area unless there are specific questions, because that's not an area where we see particular problems or legislation coming forward. I do want to talk about affordability and availability issues, and then Joel's going to talk about consumer issues. Over the past several years, we have spent quite a bit of time focusing on affordability and availability in the property and casualty sector and also health insurance. And you probably saw health insurance, if anybody saw the front page headline in the Oregonian today, is a very considerable and growing problem. But again, that's not something that I was planning to spend time on today unless there are questions, because it's my understanding that this committee's focus is probably going to be more on other insurance areas. We do see those continuing double-digit increases, though, and that is an area that we continue to spend time working on. In the property and casualty area, and that is the whole range of the consumer-oriented auto, homeowners, and then the commercial product, there tend to be fewer problems, but actually over the past few years, we have seen a number of problems due to what's called a hard market. And a hard market is characterized by large price increases and shrinking availability as insurance companies tighten up their underwriting criteria. And hard versus soft markets tend to be cyclical, and they tend to be national. And we have been in a hard market cycle for a number of years now. But what we are seeing is some softening of that market on a national level. We are starting to see increases starting to flatten out, and insurance become more affordable and available. So there is a silver lining on the horizon, but that's not necessarily, that those cycles tend to take years to develop, so that's not necessarily an answer to the issues that we're facing today. And we are seeing hard markets in several very specific areas, notably medical malpractice, construction contractors liability, and adult foster care. And I want to just touch on each of those briefly, because each of those may be items which are on the legislature's agenda this term. Medical malpractice, of course, continues to be very high profile at the ballot box and in the legislative session, and I'm sure this session will be no exception. We have provided you with a fact sheet, which is attached to the written testimony about Oregon's medical malpractice market, what we're seeing in terms of premiums, what we're seeing in terms of rate increases over the past few years, what the market concentration looks like, and what some of the issues are. There have been very substantial rate increases over the past few years, and rates have gone up again this past year, although, again, the little bit of silver lining, loss ratios have started to level off. Last session, the legislature passed House Bill 3630 to address the specific problem of access to health care in rural areas and the costs faced by rural physicians in purchasing malpractice insurance. That four-year program provides subsidies, essentially, to rural physicians, ranging from 80% for obstetricians down to 40% for all practitioners. And over 1,000 doctors have participated in that program during its first year. House Bill 3630 also authorized a panel to work with an actuarial consultant to gather data on the Oregon medical malpractice market specifically, and that consultant's report has now been produced. And so there is a wealth of data available for looking at these issues, and of course we're aware that a number of stakeholders are coming forward with proposals, and we stand ready to assist in any way we can in analyzing those options. I assume that whichever committee is going to have jurisdiction over medical malpractice issues will probably be scheduling some overview hearings on that topic. So unless there are questions, I wasn't planning to go into any of the specifics, proposals that may or may not be on the table today. The second hard market area, and one that may well be in this committee's jurisdiction, is construction contractor liability. And that market has become very hard over the past few years. We have worked with Construction Contractors Board, and they and we have been hearing quite a bit about it from the industry. Our consumer advocacy unit began actually a special project in May of 2003 to assist construction contractors in finding insurance. We took 228 calls the first month and have taken over 2,600 calls to date from contractors having difficulty finding insurance. Our response has been to use one of our few regulatory tools in this area and set up something called a market assistance plan, which is essentially a matching service to assist contractors in finding insurance from those carriers who are providing coverage in their particular niche. And this does tend to be a niche market. For example, multifamily residential contractors have in some cases found great difficulty getting coverage. Contractors who work on the skin of the building have, and a lot of that is because one of the products which nationally has resulted in a number of claims is the use of an artificial stucco product, which is an exterior product. The volume of calls that we've received has dropped considerably since we established that market assistance plan, but that does not mean that contractors aren't still addressing the issues of the difficulty and the expense of providing coverage. There were two bills enacted last session which were aimed at addressing construction contractor liability issues. Senate Bill 943 authorized the Construction Contractors Board to allow residential contractors to provide alternative forms of security in lieu of liability insurance. We worked with the board to try to develop some of those alternatives, but no consensus was reached, and the board has not, in fact, found an alternative product that it felt comfortable authorizing under that piece of legislation. The other bill was Senate Bill 909, which set up an opportunity to cure process so that when a homeowner had a home defect, there was a dialogue and an ability for the construction contractor to come in and address it prior to litigation. We understand from the industry that there may be a desire to either move forward in that, further in that area, and that also there may be some technical problems with that bill that they would like to have addressed. So a number of those proposals can be promising but haven't solved the problem at this point. We are aware that there a number of stakeholders are looking at other ways to address the issues, and again, as I said, I'm sure that you will be seeing proposals. A number of the insurance options which are available in today's market are very expensive, and many are with surplus lines carriers, which are they are what are called non-admitted carriers, and they are subject to much, much less regulation than standard admitted carriers. And under Oregon law, when a market need cannot be met by admitted carriers, surplus lines carriers are authorized to provide coverage. And that coverage then can have many more exclusions and limitations, so that what we're hearing from some members of the industry is, yes, I can buy insurance, but when I read the exclusions, what is it that I'm actually buying? We have worked with contractor groups on some other insurance alternatives, including the potential for forming what's called a risk retention group, which is essentially a contractor or industry-sponsored insurance pooling arrangement outside the regulated insurance market. But the market does have significant risks associated with it, and thus far, although I understand some of those discussions may still be ongoing, thus far there has not been action by the industry to move forward with a risk retention group. A third troubled market, hard market, that I wanted to mention just briefly is insurance for adult foster care facilities. That is another critical market given the central role that adult foster care plays in Oregon's social service delivery system. And the problem is particularly acute among the smallest providers, those facilities serving five or fewer clients, particularly if they have both genders in the facility. And again, we have not seen substantial claims experience here in Oregon, but on a national level there have been claims, and the market has simply tightened up. Some carriers have left the market, and those that are here are limiting what they will write. We have worked closely with the Department of Human Services on options. One option that you will see in one of the bills introduced at the request of our department, Senate Bill 118, and also a parallel bill from Department of Human Services, Senate Bill 174, is to make sure that people who have adult foster care facilities in their homes can still buy homeowners insurance. That is, it's one thing for a carrier to say, I am not going to insure the risk associated with that business, but to say, I will not provide you with homeowners insurance for your standard homeowners risks means that that person stands the risk of not being able to keep their home or get a mortgage or get coverage. So our homeowners bill, which Joel's going to talk about in a little more detail later, has that element in it as well. Before leaving the general topic of affordable and available insurance, I do want to mention that one of our bills, Senate Bill 116, proposes to give the insurance division better tools to address these types of hard markets at an earlier point in the process. I mentioned that we have established a market assistance plan for construction contractors' liability insurance. That's the first time that a market assistance plan, or MAP, MAP, has been used in Oregon. That is one of the existing tools, but it is quite cumbersome to use and requires the insurance industry to actually come forward with a plan rather than allowing us to establish a plan by administrative order. The second tool existing in Oregon law, which has not been used, is a joint underwriting agreement, which would allow us to actually go further and require the industry to provide coverage in certain unserved or hard-to-serve areas. So we do have a bill to expand the use of both of those tools, the MAP and the JUA, to allow them to be used with more flexibility and speed so that we are better prepared to address hard markets when they occur. that is basically what I wanted to cover in my portion of the testimony, and Joel Aereo is going to address some of the consumer issues, but if in light of our schedule, I wanted to pause and see whether there are questions about anything I've covered thus far before we move on, in case I have to walk out on you, which I'll probably do.
Thank you, Ms. Streisinger. I do have one question. It's an issue that I've been wrestling with and have a bill that on my desk, an LC bill dealing with adult foster care, because we have a real problem here. It's a real balance in between the fact that we need care and it's growing, and the cost factor of all these things for people who are willing to provide this care is significant. And yet, how do we also afford the protections of those folks? And I was, surprised to learn, and I think Mr. Aereo and I had this conversation over months ago when I heard from a constituent who was an employee, not an owner of the home, not a family member, but an employee of an adult foster home, and was injured in lifting one of her patients, kind of didn't have workers' comp. Wasn't required to, the owner was not required to have the employees have workers' comp. And they end up going to an emergency room and other people paid for that. But I'm curious, when I was looking at those exemptions and what were placed in 89 and 90, your thoughts on how we balance the making things affordable and access to health care, especially our senior population, and making sure that those people have adequate coverages for the injuries that that are common in that industry, without having the general public then having to pay for those. And I'm just curious as your thoughts on that balance, because I wrestle with that as to how we strike a balance that's fair and also protective.
Mr. Chair, it's a very difficult issue to struggle with. That particular issue that you raise on with respect to workers' compensation coverage for those workers, we did a little historical research, and I think we've provided
you
with some of that background. And what we found is that particular exemption was put in place at the time when two things were happening. One of them was an expansion of the use of foster parents, and the concern that the foster parent system would become unaffordable if workers' comp coverage, if the workers' compensation laws applied to people who provide who serve as foster parents, and then at the same time the downsizing of Fairview and the concern that those types of small group facilities would become unavailable if they had to provide workers' compensation coverage. We're seeing in these adult foster care, although this is liability insurance, as not that I was discussing rather than homeowners insurance, somebody pays the tab. And those facilities are serve clients that the state of Oregon pays for. And so it is a very, very challenging and difficult problem to say, well, who should bear the cost? Who should bear the risk? And what's the right level of risk? And it is something we continue to struggle with. We are with the Department of Human Services. They have looked at, and we have looked with them at a wide, wide range of options. One of the options that we actually found to be the most promising was an outfit, out of California, which was offering an insurance product specifically aimed at entities that contract with governments. So it will essentially allow these entities that are all providing similar service to a government to have some type of pooling and not necessarily be treated as a standalone. They're operating under standards, presumably, that government imposes. And unfortunately, what we found within the last few weeks that outfit is no longer making that option available. It was a grave disappointment to us because that sounded like a solution. We've been looking at different kinds of risk pools, but it is a very challenging problem. What we find in the commercial market is, of course, risk aversion, so that if a problem is occurring somewhere and in these facilities in other parts of the country, there have been issues, for example, patient-to-patient issues or client-to-client issues involving violence or involving sexual conduct, and that creates risk that the insurance market is afraid of, and there can be civil rights issues arising. So it is a very significant challenge, and I wish I had an answer for you, but I don't. It is a question of who pays or who doesn't get compensated for the injury.
Well, we'll look for your help and assistance on that, and I do appreciate your office working to provide that historical perspective. That was very interesting. Questions for Director Streisinger before we allow her to move on? Thank you very much. We'll be working with you often.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Ario.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Again, for the record, Joel Ario, I'm the administrator of the insurance division. Before leaving the topic of hard markets, I'd just like to say that I very much appreciate the insurance division Director Streisinger's leadership on these issues, because as I think you heard here, on each of the three markets that are the most difficult, where there really are very hard to find solutions, we've come up with at least some alternatives in each of them. In medical malpractice, that subsidy program that we have, I get calls from other insurance regulators around the country who say, gee, how did you put that together, and they want to do kind of the same thing, because it's a band-aid, it doesn't solve the problem, but it does provide some additional lubrication in the market during a hard market period. So I think that's been successful. As Corey mentioned, the map that we created, first map we've ever created in the last couple years, and again that's done provided some help in the contractor liability market. And then finally in the adult foster care, we thought we had this solution, and then it turns out this outfit, what it actually happens there is that we're kind of victims of our own success in this state, that we do such a good job with foster care and putting people out into the community rather than warehousing them in large institutions, that when the insurers take a look at the marketplace, the profile of people who are out in those foster care homes is, from their perspective, a higher risk profile than in a lot of states. And as Corey mentioned, if there's one thing that's true of insurance companies, it's risk averse is word number one. And so they looked at our market and said, well, it's not quite the same market we have in some other places, and that was part of the reason that didn't work. But I think we've got this homeowner type solution that we're proposing that'll help some, and we'll continue to work on all those things. But we really, I think, from my experience 10 years in the business, we've had more proactive type work on these hard market situations, and Corey constantly saying to me, don't say there are no solutions, go find something else to do. And I think it shows in what we've been able to do. With that, let me turn to the other two topics here today, fair treatment of consumers and the rest of our legislative agenda. The fair treatment of consumers, we start with our consumer advocacy unit here, which handles 20,000 inquiries and 5,000 complaints every year. So that's a high volume of activity. It gives us a fairly good window into what are Oregonians thinking about their insurance companies, where do they see issues. And it's not the only way we find out about issues. Some things don't show up in consumer complaints. But on the whole and on the main, we're trying to put more and more emphasis on, let's really pay attention to where the consumer complaints come from, and let's focus our attention on the problems that people are actually telling us they have, as opposed to every theoretical problem that someone may bring us at any given moment. And really, there are three things I want to bring your attention to in that respect. The first is credit scoring, which we dealt with last session, and I'll sort of give you a little context there. The homeowner's bill, which we're bringing because of consumer complaints. And then third, total loss, which is a term of art in the insurance industry. It means when your car is in an accident and the insurance company says, this is a total loss, we're not going to pay you to repair that car, we're going to pay you for the value of it instead. And that's historically been an area, probably the single area, the most complaints. So we'll talk a little about what we're doing in all three of those areas. Credit scoring first. Last session, this legislature, with the chair's leadership on the issue on the Senate side, passed Senate Bill 260. I think that's the bill that you originally authored that carried through the session. And what it did is put Oregon on the map with one of the stronger consumer protection laws with respect to credit scoring in the country. The law basically prohibits the use of credit scoring with any current customer, either for canceling current customers or for rating up, increasing the rates on current customers. And it's that second part that makes Oregon relatively unique. But that's where we were hearing a lot of consumer complaints. So now Oregon has that basic law. It also added a number of consumer protections for all consumers. And that bill, I'm happy to say, has basically worked to substantially reduce the number of complaints here in Oregon. In 2003, we got like 140, 150 consumer complaints on credit scoring. In 2004, it was down to 35. So the bill worked and took away a good chunk or most of the kind of consumer complaints we have. I will tell you that we continue to hear, particularly from consumer groups and some from the agent community as well, that say, you know, a full ban of credit scoring would be a better approach to this issue. And I suspect you're going to see those bills in this legislative session. We don't have a position one way or the other on that. That's where we say the judgment call, policy call to the legislature as to whether you want to take it the next step. But we certainly do continue to hear some consumer complaints, and I think that's an important issue probably for you to consider. We do ourselves have some technical issues on implementation. It's easier for us as regulators if the legislature says just allow it and let the market reign, or they say don't allow it, we prohibit it. Those are easy to implement. When the legislature says, well, don't prohibit it, but also kind of regulate it, restrict it in the middle somewhere, there's a lot of line drawing and that sort of thing that has to get done. And so we've got a ton of these kind of questions about exactly what is an existing customer, and you get a new car, a new house, you know, is that a new policy or not? Those sorts of things. And we are trying to solve all those regulatorily. If we can't, though, we may, before the session's done, bring those issues back to you as some technical implementation issues from the last bill. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of our basic perspective on credit scoring. The second issue is our homeowner bill. During the real peak part of the hard market, which is probably 2002, 2003, right around the time of the last legislative session is when we were probably experiencing the most difficulty. The hard market really was a combination of the stock market decline in 2000, the 9/11 experience, which ate into company reserves in a big way, sort of provoked the real problems in the market. And so during that period, when, again, remember, generally the trend of insurance companies is to raise rates and kick people out of the market that they don't want as high risk, that was happening in the homeowner market, and we were hearing a lot of complaints in the homeowner market. Complaints doubled overall and tripled and even quadrupled in certain categories like cancellations and rate increases. So we started taking a careful look at that market and saw that although in insurers, this is the first thing you'll hear from the insurers, and they're right, that Oregon has a healthy and competitive homeowner market. We like where we are nationally on homeowner insurance rates. I think we're 47th in the country in the last rating. It'd be great to be 50th, but we have some of the lowest rates in the country. But when you look at what were consumers complaining about and what were the kind of problems that we were seeing, it became clear that one of the reasons we have that kind of market is because we have very few protections for people if they have any kind of claims activity. And so one of the stories I like to tell is that if you listen to the consumers who complain to us, and if you've sat in on some of the hearings we held on this issue, the general thrust of the complaints would be, you know, I had great homeowner rates, and then I had a relatively insignificant thing, maybe even just an inquiry to my company, and suddenly my rates either skyrocketed or I was canceled and I couldn't even get new insurance. So the lesson was kind of that, you know, the homeowner policy is great until you make an inquiry about your policy, much less even make a claim on it. So there's definitely a sense of, you know, not enough kind of stability, not enough fairness to the consumer in the market. So we looked at, you know, what other states do, what kind of protections would maybe make sense, and came up with a homeowner bill of rights that we think will keep us, you know, with a healthy and competitive market. We're not trying to create unnecessary regulation here, but some more basic elements of fairness in the market. And the issues that are currently in our bill, and we are in, quite constant contact with the stakeholders on this one. We're talking to the insurers a lot. We're talking to the agents. We're talking to the consumer groups, and trying to, hopefully by the time we bring the bill, which I guess actually wasn't going to come to this committee, it's going to come to the Senate Commerce, but by the time we bring that bill, we hope to have a closer meeting of the minds maybe on it. But the kind of things that are in the bill are, first, when you use these national claims databases, which is CLUE, people probably have heard of, is one of them. There's another one called A+, that you ought to give the consumer clear disclosure ahead of time that you're using that database. A lot of times consumers aren't aware that the databases are being used. And then you ought to give them clear notice of their opportunity to look at what data you have and what data you've used, and correct the record where necessary, and official notice on adverse action. All of these things are part of federal law, but one thing we learn in insurance, federal government doesn't necessarily enforce these things and watchdog them the way we would at the state level. So we're proposing to put into state law these kind of basic consumer protections about the database so people know what's there and have an opportunity to correct their records and that sort of thing. Second is, how far back should you be able to look? We think you should be able to look back 5 years on claims. After that, you kind of get a pass on anything older than 5 years. Third issue is, you know, are there certain kinds of claims that maybe shouldn't be counted? Clearly, I think everyone's going to agree now, including the insurers, that simple inquiries to your insurance producer, what we call agents, they ought not to be used against you. What about claims that get started but never end up being paid? Should those be used? Right now, our bill says you can't use any of those either. Should only be able to use paid claims. But you'll hear an argument about where's the right place to draw the line on that. And then weather claims. That's in our bill right now, saying claims, natural cause claims, should not be used. Of course, then you get into what is the definition of natural cause, but the concept being, if it's a big catastrophic sort of situation, those kind of claims shouldn't be used to wholesale cause people in a particular neighborhood problems. Corey mentioned the adult foster care issues in our bill. And again, I want to emphasize, we don't require insurers to cover the adult foster care risk. They can specifically exclude it from their policy, their homeowner policy, but they can't discriminate against people simply on that basis. They have to write the homeowner policy. And then finally, we have some clarification of some of the cancellation rules. We basically don't see insurance companies canceling people midterm or canceling people early on. But, you know, we've seen it's not prohibited by law now, and we have seen some extreme examples. There was a lawsuit that came out of Portland where a house was going into the sliding into the ocean, and the insurer said, gee, since this is during the first 60 days, I'm just going to cancel you unilaterally. Avoid that claim, and the lawyer who took it brought it to our attention, went to court, and the judge said, well, I don't see a specific prohibition on that in Oregon law, but it's against public policy, so I'm going to prohibit it in this case. We think some of those kinds of things ought to be put in law to protect everybody. So the homeowner bill, it will be a major issue for us in this session. And then our final issue that I'll highlight for you is total loss, again, where somebody has their car in an accident that results in the company saying, oh, I'm going to repair this car, I'm going to give you the value for it. A lot of people think their cars are worth more than they actually are, so we're never going to solve this problem completely, but we think we can do better than what we have currently. And the current system we have is basically vendors of the insurance companies make the valuations. A couple companies, ADP and CCC, make the valuations. A lot of people find them to be unfair in the way they do the valuations. Their only client is the insurance industry, so there's questions about how impartial they can really be. Our proposal, our concept, which we're working with Senator Ringo on, is not part of our official agenda, but we're providing information on it. And this may, by the way, end up being something that insurers could even support, is to use one of the independent third-party sources, like Kelley Blue Book, Edmunds. The people are already in the market doing valuations. I sold a couple cars this year. I go up on the web and look at what they tell me the value is. In both cases with me, it was pretty close to what I actually ended up settling for. So maybe we should use those services, save insurers a bundle of money that they pay to ADP and CCC, and have something that seems more independent. That's kind of the concept of that bill. So those are three issues on fair treatment. Finally, let me just briefly talk. We've talked now about two of our bills, the MAP-JUA bill, which will be in this committee. Senate Bill 118 is the homeowner bill, which will be in Senate Commerce. There is a second bill that will be in this committee, which is Senate Bill 129, and it's a relatively minor tweak to our regulation for health care service contractors. These are the HMOs and other provider-run health insurance companies. They have different rules in some respects than traditional insurers. And for the last 20 years, if you looked at it, it's been a steady process of applying the traditional insurer rules to these hybrids. The one we have on the table this year is to apply the investment rules, investments in subsidiaries. So this bill would take current law on HCSEs and say meet the same standards as traditional insurers. We think that's a non-controversial bill at this point, and that'll be in front of this committee. And then we finally have a bill, two House bills, House Bill 2092, which would eliminate our regulation of charitable annuities. We've never had a problem with charities issuing charitable annuities, and when we looked at it in the program review, we saw that really our current regulation probably wouldn't catch a problem if we did have one, so we either needed to ramp up the regulation or eliminate it. If we ramped it up, charities would tell us they can't afford it, and since we're not having any problems, we propose to eliminate it. And then finally, House Bill 2160 was our. We always have a technical cleanup bill. The insurance code is kind of a monstrosity that we, each 2 years, we find some problems with the code, come in with a bill to clean up some of those problems, and we have one of those bills this session as well. With that, I thank you for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Ariel. Questions for Mr. Ariel about those issues or other insurance issues that we might be looking at or have particular interest in?
I have one.
Yes, Senator Decker.
I feel like, you know, we should at least ask you have someone over, you should ask a question or two.
Warm them up.
Yes, get into this.
Fine with me if you don't. No, my feelings won't be hurt.
We don't want to hurt your feelings. One on mortgage interest or mortgage insurance. I was meeting with a group of housing folks that were interested in affordable housing and also interested in first-time home ownership and looking for legislative remedies. And one of the barriers that they saw was the mortgage insurance that you're required to pay. And I don't know if it's federal statute or state statute or if there is statutory remedies or your division has thoughts on it, but I certainly cataloged it as something that is worthy of examination, the requirement that you pay a mortgage insurance up to, I believe it's 20% of equity.
Mr. Chair, Senator Deckert, yes, I believe that it is, as you state, that if you don't pay at least 20% down, then the banks require you to pick up mortgage insurance. And it is a problem because oftentimes, as I understand it, the banks don't necessarily tell you when you've made enough payments to get over the 20% hurdle. So a lot of people end up paying even longer than they need to. And like any insurance, it's a burden if you have to pay it. The thing this would not be an insurance regulation issue per se. Say it's not a statute that requires that. I believe it's a banking practice issue, but I can get back to you on the specifics of that. It would be a regulatory issue for our sister agency within DCBS, the Division of Finance and Corporate Securities. But my belief, and I'll make sure this is true, is that that's a banking requirement more than a statutory requirement.
Contractual. So, Mr. Chair, I mean, yes. The question would be, is for those who have outstanding credit who aren't really a risk, is it necessary to or is it feasible to lower the that insurance rate for folks that have demonstrated no risk or very little risk? So that's what I would be actually really interested in the answer, and if there's other states that have found ways to at least lower that entry price or that barrier for the home buyer, I for one would be interested to know what options we could provide them.
Mr. Chair, Senator Deckert, it's a very good set of questions. Again, it's more my colleague Floyd Lanter would be in a position to answer the policy questions there, but I will make sure that I bring this back and that you get an answer to that promptly in terms of what our position on that would be.
And I know Floyd's not here, Mr. Chair, but if he has thoughts in terms of options, or I don't see anyone from the banking industry, I'm sure they'll let me know soon what their thoughts are in terms of the practice.
Mr. Chair, Senator Deckard, I can predict their thoughts more easily than I can predict ours. But
I can't answer.
Well, thank you, Senator Deckard. Actually, that's a very good point, and banking and finance will be the purview of this committee, and that would be an appropriate topic. And I've had experience with friends who have had that situation and were paying beyond and were not notified and had no idea that they were paying monies of which they had no need at that point with the equity in their home. So that would be a great discussion with Mr. Lenter and see if on a state level we could encourage better reporting of that and to ease those burdens. That's a very good point. Senator Monta Sanderson.
Thank you. I have a question regarding, do you meet regularly with the insurance people, and were they a part of designing some of these bills that you're proposing?
Mr. Chair, Senator Monis Anderson, yes, indeed. We have very ongoing relation, consistent kind of ongoing relationships with all of our stakeholders, both within the insurance companies, within the agent community, and within the consumer community. We don't have to do a lot of outreach to get the insurance companies to be at our door on these issues, but we make it a point to reach out to consumer groups. I'm happy to see at least one of them is represented in the audience. Today or was when I started. And so we do try to talk about all of these bills with all of our different constituents. I will tell you that on the homeowner bill and on the MAP and JUA bill, we do not see eye to eye with the insurance industry, the companies, yet. They still think both of those bills, probably the MAP JUA bill in particular, unnecessary. On the homeowner bill, though, we are actively engaged in discussion to try to find some middle ground. If you look at what's happened in other states around the country, there is some middle ground on those sorts of issues. On the other,
you mean clarification, please? When you say the homeowner's bill, the foster care?
No, I'm sorry. The bill that would create a consumer bill of rights around homeowner issues. The other three bills, we think we have consensus on. We don't know of any opposition to any of those three bills.
Thank you.
Any other questions? So, members, we're actually ahead of schedule. This won't happen often, but we'll take advantage of it. A couple of things for the group. We're going to carry through our organizational meeting rules until the next meeting to make that announcement here, because I'd like to have all our members present. Senator Starr was excused to 2:15, and I think it's important to have everyone here for that. Our next meeting, I'll give you just a forecast of the next few meetings. Next Thursday and then the following Tuesday, we're going to conduct hearings on legislative oversight of the sale of Portland General Electric. And so I would encourage you to, research questions on that. We have a very narrow scope that I intend to cover on that. We are not going to cover the merits of any of that case, which would be rather presumptuous in a few hours of something that's been done for thousands of hours. But what we know there's a lot of discussion around the building about that, and people have their own ideas, which is not uncommon to come to the legislature with their ideas. And I think the overall question that we need to ask as the legislature and as the board of directors, essentially, for the PUC is whether we have provided sufficient tools for in the regulatory process to regulate things like the sale of Portland General Electric. And for those who would like to come to the legislature and ask us not to participate, to be able to demonstrate that there is sufficient legislative oversight and tools provided to protect the interests of ratepayers and the public. And for those, on the other hand, who come to us and individual members and ask us to legislate their position, to be able to present a prima facie case to us that we haven't provided sufficient oversight to the PUC to handle that, and that should be their role. So that's going to be the purpose of those two hearings. Then on the following Thursday, we'll be beginning our look at bills. And then on Friday, a week from Friday, we will be having the first road committee hearing, and I hope everyone will attend. As you know, we are a small committee, and we're holding it out in western Washington County to be in the general area of Senator Deckert and Senator Starr. It'll be, I believe, at Forest Grove. And we'll be talking about specific bills, and what I would ask you to do to, and I'm going to introduce them when our full committee is here. You know, James Goulding is our committee assistant, does a great job, and Teresa Van Winkle is our administrator, and we'll have formal introductions on Thursday of these folks when our whole committee is here. But one thing I will ask you folks is if there are bills that have been referred to our committee that you have particular interest in, or that people in your community have an interest in, then I would be interested in scheduling them for that meeting in Forest Grove so that you can have an opportunity to bring people, constituents, others who might be interested to have an opportunity in their general community to have a chance to do that. So just let Teresa know, and we'll do everything we can to make that happen. So with that, I appreciate your indulgence. We will be meeting at 1 o'clock on Thursday. Okay, and we're adjourned.